Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take a stack of dense source material, extract the most crucial knowledge, and, well, turn it into something you can use immediately.
High fidelity insight.
Exactly. And today we are taking a scalpel to a real cornerstone of respiratory diagnostics, the spirometry graph. Mm-hmm. Specifically, we're unpacking the physics and the hidden technology behind those critical looping curves, the flow volume loops.
Right.
Our mission today goes beyond just, you know, interpreting the curves themselves. We want to understand the engine room.
The engine room, I like that.
Yeah, how all these technical factors, from the speed of the sensors to the little choices baked into the software algorithms, how all that determines the accuracy and really the trustworthiness of this tool.
And for you, the listener, this is about knowing not just what the graph means, but if you can actually trust what you're seeing.
Okay, so let's start there. A spirometry graph. What is it in the simplest terms?
It's basically a visual ledger. It translates a physical act, a forced breath, into a relationship between airflow, which is how fast you're pushing air out.
And lung volume, how much air you've moved.
Precisely. And what's fascinating is that it serves this dual role. It's your diagnostic snapshot, yes, but it's also an indirect quality check on the device that made it.
Okay, let's unpack this. The main visualization we're talking about is the flow volume loop. It's a pretty elegant solution, right?
It's incredibly elegant. You're plotting airflow on the vertical axis, up for exhaling, down for inhaling.
And volume on the horizontal.
Okay. It compresses a huge amount of data into one single continuous path.
And that loop has two distinct halves. You've got the expiratory curve, that big upward sweep.
Mm-hmm. That's all about airway resistance.
And then the inspiratory limb, the downward curve, which tells us about the upper airway. But before we get to the patient's lungs, we have to look at the device's lungs, so to speak.
Exactly. We have to start there. Because every single millimeter of that curve's shape, every angle, every peak, it all relies entirely on the device's technical foundation.
Its calibration, its sensors.
All of it. Calibration, sensor responsiveness, signal processing, any subtle distortion or delay introduced by the tech immediately changes the clinical meaning of that graph.
So the technology is really the starting line.
It's the essential starting line for any confident interpretation.
Now, this next point is where it gets really interesting for me. This relationship between speed and accuracy. Why is high temporal resolution, basically, capturing changes really, really quickly, so critical for these loops?
It's because of the physics of it. A forced exhalation is, well, it's explosive.
Right.
Especially at peak expiratory flow, or PEF. These peaks happen in just milliseconds. If your sensor system is sluggish, if it has a slow response time, it just can't keep up.
It misses the moment.
It completely misses it. Think of it like a camera with a slow shutter speed trying to photograph a bullet.
That's a great analogy. So the sensor is just limited by inertia. It physically can't move fast enough. What's the visual cost of that lag?
The visual cost is pretty significant. A delayed response shows up as a blunted slope. The curve looks like it tops out too soon, so you get a shortened loop height overall.
And the clinical cost?
The clinical cost is that it's not random noise. It consistently biases the results toward lower airflow values. It always underestimates.
So you might think a patient has a more severe obstruction than they actually do.
Exactly. You can misclassify a patient, maybe change their medication, all because of a technical artifact, not their actual physiology.
So that sensor issue connects directly to the next technical need, which is sampling frequency.
Yes.
If the sensor can respond quickly, you then have to capture that data often enough.
Precisely. Sampling frequency is all about the resolution of your data. If you have a low sampling rate, you're essentially smoothing over those rapid changes we just talked about.
You get the general shape, but you lose the detail.
You lose all the critical detail in the peak. You need really high rates. We're talking hundreds of samples per second to preserve those sharp, physiologically important transitions.
And if the rate's too low, what does the graph show you? How does it betray that weakness?
Visually, you get these rounded peaks. Instead of a sharp, defined point that says this is the max effort, you get a sort of rounded hill.
Okay.
And that delays the curve's inflection point, making it really hard to pinpoint the true PEF. It reduces your diagnostic sensitivity, especially for something like early airway obstruction, where the exact shape of that peak is everything.
That makes total sense. So we've covered capturing flow accurately and quickly.
All right.
But that's only half the picture. The other half is volume. Let's talk about volume integration.
Right. Volume isn't measured directly.
It's derived. So how does the device actually get that measurement?
It integrates flow over time. It's an ongoing calculation. It takes the flow rate at one instant, multiplies it by the tiny time interval, and just keeps adding it to a running total.
Wait, hold on. So you're saying the volume is calculated, not measured, and that calculation compounds errors? Why is that so treacherous?
Well, think of it this way. Imagine you're calculating the distance you've driven. That's the volume, using a speedometer, the flow. That's off by just 1%.
Okay.
Over a one-minute drive, that's nothing. But over an hour, or 3 hours, that tiny 1% flow error has accumulated and compounded into a completely inaccurate distance.
Ah, I see. So any small error at the start of the breath, from sensor drift or whatever, doesn't just stay small. It gets magnified over the entire maneuver.
It gets magnified, exactly. And that's where these integration errors can turn a tiny inaccuracy into a significant clinical deviation.
And we see that on the graph.
You see it very clearly.
Yeah.
The most dramatic sign is a failure of the loop to close evenly. The volume at the start doesn't match the volume at the end. The loop doesn't return to zero, which is physiologically impossible.
That sounds like a disaster unless your starting point is perfect.
Which brings us to calibration precision.
Yes, calibration is what stabilizes this whole system.
It's the process of aligning the sensor output with a known standard, right? Usually a very precise 3-liter syringe. You push a known volume through and you make sure the device registers that exact volume. When that calibration drifts, your baseline is lost.
And the visual consequence of that drift.
It's a predictable distortion. Peak flows will shift downward, the whole loop might narrow, and the expiratory limb loses its characteristic contour.
So a clinician can spot that.
A good clinician can.
Mm-hmm.
Reviewing the symmetry and the repeatability of the loops is a very quick way to assess the calibration status of the device.
Okay, now let's get to the hidden layer, the behind-the-scenes manipulation. Software algorithms. The raw data is noisy, right?
Very noisy. You have electronic fluctuations, maybe small coughs from the patient, other artifacts. Algorithms are necessary to filter that noise out and generate a clean curve.
But there's a balancing act there, isn't there?
A massive balancing act.
Because if you filter too aggressively, you remove noise, sure, but you also risk removing subtle, clinically important features.
You erase them. You make the data too smooth and distort the slope. But if you underfilter, the graph looks messy and not physiologic.
So how big is this trade-off?
It's huge. Algorithmic smoothing fundamentally changes the steepness of slopes and the definition of peaks. Think about a patient with early disease. Maybe they have a clite shoulder or notching in the mid-flow part of the curve.
A key diagnostic sign.
A critical diagnostic sign. And if the software is programmed to be too aggressive with its smoothing, it just digitally erases it.
Wow. So the graph is as much a software outcome as it is a hardware one.
Absolutely. The physician is, in a way, interpreting the software's interpretation of the physics.
That's a startling insight. Okay, moving into the clinic. Let's talk about the final presentation, the importance of a properly labeled spirometry graph.
It's the user interface. It sounds basic, but proper labeling axes, units, reference points is non-negotiable.
And it can also reveal problems with the device itself.
It can. For instance, if the graph's visualization window is truncated, if the software is squishing the loop into a small space, it can hide a failure of loop closure or obscure the true effort. It suggests the software is masking a technical problem.
So when a clinician finally looks at this result, the stakes are incredibly high. Let's look at the classic visual patterns of disease. Take obstructive patterns, that classic scooped or concave shape.
Right, and here's where a technical failure becomes a diagnostic catastrophe.
Because, as you said, a device that underestimates PEF
inherently exaggerates that obstructive look. A patient with mild obstruction might present with a curve so scooped and blunted that the clinician incorrectly escalates treatment.
All because the device essentially lied about the severity.
Exactly. The graph's fidelity is everything for meaningful differentiation.
And on the other side, restrictive patterns. These show a reduced overall loop width, but the shape is mostly preserved.
And that relies heavily on accurate volume integration.
But if that volume calculation is flawed, say, from that cumulative error we talked about, it could falsely suggest restriction.
Yes. If the machine consistently underreads the total volume, the graph looks narrow. The clinician might mistakenly conclude the patient has a restrictive lung defect when the problem is just measurement bias.
And what about the inspiratory limb, the bottom half of the loop?
It's often overlooked, but it's a fantastic quality control check. It shows upper airway function, sure, but it also confirms measurement symmetry across bidirectional flow.
So what's a red flag there?
If you see inspiratory flattening that appears intermittently, one breath is fine, the next is flattened or jagged, that's a classic warning sign. It often suggests instability in the flow measurement system, not necessarily a disease in the patient.
This brings us to a critical challenge for every clinician: distinguishing patient effort from device limitation.
The ultimate challenge.
A patient who doesn't try hard will create a weird-looking loop. But a device with sensor lag can visually mimic that same poor effort. How do you tell them apart?
You can only tell them apart if you trust your device first. When you know the device is accurate and has passed its quality checks, then repeated testing is the key.
So if you see the same abnormality over and over,
consistent abnormalities across multiple well-coached attempts, that strongly suggests true physiology. The patient is truly limited.
If the curves are all over the place,
inconsistent, wildly variable curves, that points to measurement issues, unstable sensors, poor software. The device itself is the suspect.
Okay, stepping back a bit, we also need to talk about environmental factors, which can sneakily alter the graph.
Absolutely. Temperature, humidity, barometric pressure, they all affect air density, and the sensors are highly sensitive to that.
So the device has to correct for that.
It has to correct the measured volumes to standard physiological conditions,
right,
what we call BTPS, body temperature, pressure saturated with water vapor.
I never realized that. So the air in a cold clinic is different from the warm, humid air coming out of the lungs, and that difference has to be calculated out.
Precisely. If that compensation algorithm is flawed, or the internal sensors are drifting, you get subtle distortions. You might see a gradual baseline shift over a day of testing.
This technical integrity feeds right into what I see as the ultimate visual benchmark for quality: repeatability.
Repeatability is the cornerstone of trust. You evaluate it simply by overlaying multiple loops from the same session.
And in a good system.
In a high-quality system, those curves should be nearly identical. They should trace the same path with almost no divergence. The expiratory limbs should stack neatly on top of each other. That's stability.
And if they diverge, if one loop is wider or higher than the next, that's a major red flag.
A huge red flag. Poor repeatability signals unstable sensors or flawed algorithms. When the graphs vary widely for no clear reason related to patient effort, the device's accuracy is fundamentally questionable. It's the visual lie detector for the system.
And that stability is paramount for longitudinal monitoring, right? Tracking a patient's health over years.
It's absolutely essential. Monitoring relies on comparing very subtle shape changes over time. You might be looking for a slight loss of convexity in the curve from month to month,
which you'd miss entirely if the machine is noisy.
If the device's own measurement characteristics are inconsistent from one session to the next, that subtle clinical change is completely masked by technical noise. Unstable graphs undermine any valid long-term comparison.
So our final takeaway on quality is that these flow volume loops are central because they consolidate so much information into one rich visualization.
Exactly. The visual analysis of the curve offers immediate insight, not just into the patient, but into the device's own integrity.
So to summarize the core idea for our listeners,
spirometry systems are just sophisticated intermediaries. They stand between the patient's breath and the clinician's decision. And you have to evaluate the true respiratory behavior, not artifacts from the technology.
Confidence in that data accuracy.
The fidelity, the smoothness, and especially the repeatability of that loop. That is the absolute starting point for any confident life-affecting diagnosis.
Absolutely. Thank you for walking us through the technical anatomy of these curves. It's clear that device performance directly determines whether those subtle, clinically significant features are even visible.
Or trustworthy.
If the device distorts the data, the clinician is, to put it simply, flying blind. But that leaves us with one final provocative thought for you to mull over. If the consistency and definition of the graph itself are the primary high-resolution checks for device quality and patient effort, how does a reliance on isolated numeric values, like a single FEV1 number divorced from its visual context, increase diagnostic uncertainty in what is an inherently visual pattern recognition-based field? Something to think about.